I'm joined for Job Spot with Darren Kelly. Darren, what have you got today?
Thank you very much, John. We have four in total, and we're going to start with Gibbons's Bar Shrule. Have a vacancy for an experienced bar person for 3 to 4 shifts per week, evenings and weekends. Email tjgibbons@gmail.com. The other three jobs all come from Logstrup Tuam. Logstrup Tuam are hiring sub-assembly operators. Duties include assembly of components and kits. Full training provided. Apply via email to info@logstrup.ie. Logstrup Tuam are also hiring mechanical assembly operators. Duties include the mechanical assembly of electrical panels. Previous experience in mechanical assembly would be an advantage. Full training provided. Email CV to info@logstrup.ie. And again, Logstrup Tuam are hiring machine shop operators. Duties include the operation of press brakes, punch presses and saws. Previous experience will be an advantage. Full training provided. Email CV to info@logstrup.ie. And if you need any phone numbers or email addresses, please call our reception on 091-770-0077. Search hashtag Galway Jobs on social media or go to galwaybfm.ie/jobspot.
Good morning, and you're listening to Galway Talks with John Morley. I'm delighted to say I'm joined in studio by Mary Bennett for Galway Greats. Mary, good morning. You're welcome onto the programme, and you might just take me back to where you were born and where you grew up. You grew up in a place called Boston on the Galway-Clare border.
That's right, John. All those years ago, my father was a farmer, and there were six of us in the family. I was the eldest of six. My mother was the eldest of 12 herself. And I was very lucky to be born in a farm, because it was difficult times in the early 40s, but you were kind of self-sufficient, which was always great. You had your vegetables in the garden, and you had cows, and you were able to get your milk, and you made your own butter, you had your own eggs, and you killed your own chicken. You know, it's only now that I look back on times, we were very fortunate, I think, as children to have all that.
And you have great memories of listening to Michael O'Hare and the Box and the Neighbours coming over.
I have. Every Sunday, you know, my father would always insist on having the wet battery and the dry battery in order that they could listen to whatever match would be on. Of course, we were born, it was in County Clare, we were just on the border. And all the Clare people, you know, our Clare supporters would be into the house, and everything had to be just on, and the children had to be out playing or listening to the match, of course, which would be so loud that you could hear it any part around the yard.
Mm. And in your school then, you had a teacher from Currafin, and she had a big impact in the early part of your life.
She had. She was fantastic. She was from Currafin in County Galway, and she was lovely. She was great for the arts. You see, in the national school, we had a very small class, and there was a lot of time given to English and Irish and maths, you know, religion, and then she arts and crafts. And I think we got a great love for arts and crafts that time. And she used to go to the shows on Sundays. I think they were called Gymkhana shows or something. And she would take whatever. I know I remember knitting a pair of gloves one time, and she's showing us how to knit and how to do a toe of a sock. And she used to bring the things we used to make to these shows. And we often came back and got a little prize or something. Oh. But that was all of us in the class. But it gave us a great love for making things and doing something useful with your hands, you know.
And then you continued with education, but you moved down to your uncle and aunt-in-law in New Ross in Wexford.
That's right. And then I was there, and he had just got married, and he had a new baby, and they had a pub. So, of course, when I arrived there, you were shown how to pull a pint, and you were shown how to serve it if needs be, because the fares were always on the main street right outside the door, and they were happened every month. They'd have these fares, and of course, before I went to school, we always helped. It was part of what I loved, being allowed to help, because I was very young at the time. And I saw what it took to run a pub. He had a bottling plant eventually at the back of it, and I often was shown how to put on the labels and the bottles and how to put on the corks and the cork. And I think it was a great education in itself and something that put me into, you knowing what a pound was worth. And when you got it and you made it, you know, it was all the more valuable to you.
And then you came back to Galway and you did a few courses in terms of shorthand and typing and bookkeeping and Gort, and that led you on to your first job.
That's right. We were very lucky at the time that we had a very intensive course, and there were three of us only in the class with one teacher, Miss Kelleher from Mill Street in Cork, was taken in by the nuns in the summer parlour to try out this to see what would work. And we, two of us, were called to the civil service, but of course Dublin to us was somewhere, oh my God, we're not going to go up there. And we were got jobs locally. The two of us that got the civil service, we got went to Braids and Ennis. I went in as a shorthand typist and eventually into the financial department. Mm-hmm. And that in itself gave me a great insight into the running of finance and what it takes.
Now tell me how an accident when you fell and broke your nose led to you getting a job in the Great Southern.
Oh, well, I fell down the stairs and I had to go to Dr. Blaney in Galway to get my nose fixed. So of course I came, and when I had seen him, and I was on the way home and I was coming by the square, Air Square, and I said, oh gosh, I think I'll go into the Great Southern. I had tried Salt Hill the year before, but nobody was interested in me. So I went in, and as luck would have it, I put my bag, of course my umbrella, all aside the rails of the square. I didn't want to go into the hotel carrying all that. So of course, as luck would have it, I was told, yes, maybe I'll just see if the manager's available. I did know his name as Brian Collins at the time, and he'd agreed to see me. And up the stairs I went, and went in, of course, and he said to me, what happened to your nose? So I told him, and he said, funny, I have a broken nose from rugby. And he put me at my ease straight away and interviewed me and said to me, well, I'm sorry, I've nothing to offer to you today, but I'll put your name on file. So 4 days later I heard from him to tell me he had a job for me. And that's how I got into the Great Southern.
Mm. And I know you were doing the run short of shop there, and you eventually worked your way up to be manager, and this was all at a very young age as well.
Yes, I was only 20, 21, you know, so I was lucky. I think any of us who worked for Brian Collins was lucky. He gave you a piece of rope, and you either went up that rope or down it, and you had to, you know, he wanted you to see the better side of things and to make a success of it. But if you were wrong, you were challenged and you were told you were wrong. But he was wonderful. If you had anything you wanted to do and you weren't afraid to discuss it with him, he always gave you the chance of trying things out. And I learned so much from him. I made a lot of mistakes too en route, and I was always challenged about them, and I think that was a good thing. It's a good thing for anybody. If you make a mistake, please tell them why you made it and how you can rectify that. And that was something Brian Collins always did, but he gave you every opportunity and he always egged you on, as I used to say. You had to be egged on because you wanted to have a plus for him every time. And I think that was a great education in itself.
And you would have been dealing with a lot of American tourists there. That was kind of the market.
We had, I just arrived at the time that we had the buses started coming into the Great Southern. And the Great Southern at the time had 7 hotels, but it also owned all the buses, the coaches, and the coaches brought in the Americans, and they were the first to arrive. We also had the ships coming in at time when I started. Now that was really the beginning of tourism in Galway, of American tourism. And we had the Irish Knights. Pascal Spellman used to run the Irish Knights, and we had the visitors that visited Galway used to come in to see the Irish Knights as well. So we always had to have the shop open when that was finished. It finished generally at 11 o'clock at night, but you never looked at your watch if you were working in the hotel business. You were there to serve, and that taught us so many very good lessons. And it also got us to meet international people and how to deal with them and what they wanted and what they wanted to buy. And that, in that way, I was able to go and talk to Brian Collins and say to him, so-and-so was looking for this and so-and-so was looking for... He said, you never take no for an answer, you just find it for them. And that is exactly how he progressed. If anybody, we had to take a list of everything we were asked for that we didn't have, and then we had to go find them.
Yeah. Your first piece of music, it's by John McCormack. I know he had a big impact on your youth. You used to listen to him in the home house.
My father always played it. He loved John McCormack, and it always brings back happy memories.
In association with Windsor Motor Mall. Visit Windsor Motor Mall Galway on the Mona Bay Road. A new way to car shop.
Good morning, you're listening to Galway Talks with John Morley. We're doing Galway Greats and Mary Bennett stays opposite me now. And Mary, you met your husband in the Great Southern and you moved out to Salt Hill.
We did, John, and we had a house there and we opened a guest house. And that time it was very easy to get people because there weren't many guest houses in Salt Hill. But it gave me an insight into the local tourism. And we had a lot of people always from Dublin, and they'd come and they'd stay for a week. And that kept me busy because when I left the Great Southern, I was used to working every day almost, except your day off. And when you're going back to live in an empty house, I would have gone crazy. But the bed and breakfast, and that time, of course, we got £1 per day for bed, breakfast, and evening meal, and luncheon. So that will tell you, you know, how different things were. But it was a great income, and it was a great interest to have, and it helped me to get into tourism in Salt Hill.
Yeah, so then Father Spellman, he picks your name out of a hat, and from there you develop Salt Hill with the Salt Hill Princess, the mayor's coming, and lots of other different initiatives.
I did, and we gave us great scope, and we had a great committee there, and we had Billy O'Connor, Brendan Allen, and the Hallens and the Dunleavys. Everybody was part of it because Father Spellman, who was our president, he was the parish priest, he wanted everyone that was involved in keeping people, that they would rule the roost and that everybody who came would be looked after in Salt Hill. So we had a lot to live up to. And of course, that was before we had the Sea Point, which was the centre of entertainment. O'Connor's Pub was there and so was Dunleavy's for all the nightlife. So we had a lot to do in beautifying Salt Hill, cleaning it up and keeping it clean and selling it. And we had very good contacts with the Evening Press, the Evening Herald, through Patsy Dyke and through Mr. Heenahan, and in the Irish Press, the editor was a good friend of ours. So we got a lot of publicity, particularly for Salt Hill Princess, and the local photographers, Stan and Joe and all of them, publicised Salt Hill for us all the time.
Talk to me about Treasure Chest, because that's been a huge institution in Galway City.
Well, I suppose it started very small, and we started selling Irish product and craft items, and we were in Eglinton Street. It was, we opened the shop down there. It was beside the Five Star, the first Five Star supermarket that came to Galway, and it was the year that the cathedral was open as well. So we had a certain amount of footfall because they had to come by the shop to look at it. And we went into all the product that I knew best, like the Waterford crystals, the Irish crafts, and we developed a mail order service, and that went very well for us. We opened in Headford Road, and we had a shop as well in Ashford Castle, and we had one out on the Furbo and in the Carm Great Southern. So we had four or five items going at that time, and Eddie, my husband, was involved in the mail order. And Alton, when he left college, he came in with them to the mail order. And Melissa and Adeline worked with me in the treasure chest. Finding product was our most difficult thing. We were trying to find craft product as much as possible. You could get the yarns and you could get things like that, but to get things that were made in Ireland in my day were quite difficult. And they got to be very difficult as I progressed and bought Glynn's. I had to go to all the trade fairs abroad because we had to have the selection. And to find the selection, you went to Europe, you went to Frankfurt, you went to all the fashion fairs and fashion shows. But now, in today's world, we found that a lot of the craft people were dying away. A lot of our own Irish industries were no longer continuing, like the Waterford Crystals, that we had a major shop for Waterford Crystal at the time. It was less and less. And most products now were coming in from abroad, outside the EU. And I was always trying to get what's made in Ireland or Europe. And that, to me, had got quite difficult in the last few years.
And we'll come back to that later on. But you were very involved in tourism, and you scaled a lot of different tourism boards and otherwise, and eventually you scaled to the very top. Just talk to me about that journey up along the way, the likes of with Ireland West and Bord Fáilte and all them.
Well, I was put forward by Salt Hill Tourism Development Association to contest Mayo, because Mayo had beaten Galway for the three previous years, and we had lost a seat on the board. And I was put up really as a scapegoat, and I really didn't want to go at the time, because three of my colleagues had lost the three previous years. So this year, John Crossan from Mayo was going forward. And of course, I was put forward and accepted. Billy O'Connor and Brendan Allen and Bobby Malai were the people who put me forward. So we had buses organized and everything to go there. Now, I went to win, but I was promised, look, you're not going to win, but you'll get in the next time. However, we went down to the thing, and the night before I got a phone call to tell me that Mayo knew we were coming, and they knew we were coming by buses, and they had arranged to cut down trees on a certain journey, and we were to change our route. I couldn't believe what I was listening to, because I said, I didn't want to get involved in anything like this. However, we changed our route and we arrived in Westport, and no trees were on our way. However, the gentleman who was involved in telling me that unfortunately has passed away, a dear friend of mine whom I got to know very well, who tipped me off. However, that's what I went into, but I won the election and all hell broke loose. Poor Brendan Allen he was my agent, and he was killed on the floor for promoting me and for bringing me down to Mr. Crossan's hometown. However, I started and I didn't know what I got into, but it was wonderful what I was able to do as a result. It led to so many things. I represented Galway and Mayo and Roscommon for many years on the board for almost 20, and was chairman for many years. However, it also gave me an entry into Bord Fáilte in Dublin. And Bord Fáilte in Dublin were the kingpins and were not very involved with us down in the country. But we were fortunate that Joe Malone, who was from Mayo, was appointed the head of it. And of course, the entree was there, and there was nothing that he wouldn't give us. But I spent my time with the begging bowl. And in the end, he told me he wouldn't sit beside me at any function or any meeting, because I was always looking for something. So, I mean, but it was always for Galway or Salt Hill or Mayo or Roscommon or whatever I was involved in. And it was something one had to do in those days, which was sad, but it gave me so much encouragement that where there's a will, there's a way. Mm. And if you have anything, you must have a can-do, will-do attitude. Yeah. And I say to everyone today, there's nobody who stops you from doing anything but you. Y-O-U.
Yeah.
And this is something that I would like people to take on board, younger generation, picture. You can do anything today if you want to.
But you couldn't always do anything if you were a woman, I know, because you got into a very exclusive men's club in the tourism sector and actually scaled to the top of it as well.
That's right. We had Skoll in Galway, and Skoll are professionals in tourism, and it was an all-men's club. But International Women's Year sent an express note to every club in the world that they had to accept female members. Many clubs that time didn't, but Galway were always fast forward in everything. And I remember Joe Lally and Jack Keogh and Paddy Ryan and all those, they were in the Galway club, and I was promoted as the first lady member of that club. I didn't know what I was taking on at the time, but it was the most wonderful decision I ever made, because it led me to so many things that you could get done and do through tourism. And however, I then went on to represent Ireland. It was voting. We had 90 countries worldwide, and you didn't get on anything except it was by vote, not by proxy. You had to be there in person. So I started going, and the first one I went was in Singapore in 1978, where we were bidding for the World Congress for Ireland, because we never got anything like that. But Joe Malone was heading it, and we went on the delegation, and we worked tooth and nail and were successful. We beat Paris.
Wow.
Which was unheard of at the time, because we were a nobody, really. But Joe put on such a sterling performance that you couldn't but vote for Ireland. So we welcomed in 1980, we welcomed 4,000 of top professionals in tourism to Dublin, who also went to around the country in various things. So it's one of the best tourist promotions that we did. And it happened to be my first World Congress. And that led me to, for the last 30 years or more, I have attended everyone, north, south, east and west, and always had a platform that I could talk about Ireland and talk about home, which is Galway to me, you know.
Mm.
So people don't realise that what you can do by just meeting people, it's not just drinking and eating. You can talk about your country, you can bring your brochures. And I would say to anybody going on holidays, they don't have to be involved in tourism, but pick up the brochures of your local town, your local village, or your local hotel or bed and breakfast, and bring them with you. And you will always find an outlet that you can give them to. And that is what we did through Skoll, and what we continue to do.
And you eventually scaled to the very top of the organisation, and you're asked to put smocks on the Mexicans.
I was sent on one of my first missions to go to Mexico City and to tell them that they had to accept ladies. This was many years after the ultimatum came that we had to have ladies. So I was invited down, and of course to address them, but they didn't think I was going to address them and tell them that they had to get up and have some ladies in the club. However, the night before, I was staying in this beautiful hotel, and she owned 7 hotels and had applied for the previous 5 years to become a member. And no way would she be allowed to enter the Skoll. However, on the day it came, I was there, and I will never forget going up all those steps to City Hall and meeting all the dignitaries. And they were all pretty elderly, not a lady inside to address them. They were most gracious to me and everything. But my goodness, they were trying to put me in my place, that I was a special lady. There was nothing special about me, I told them, you know. And today, we have a lady president of Mexico. And, you know, it was a difficult task, but a very worthy one. Mm. And we became great friends as a result. But they weren't very happy to see me, I can tell you, when they heard that that was my mission.
Quite fitting with all the changing times. Your second song is What's Another Year by Johnny Logan of the Eurovision. Why'd you pick this one, Mary?
Well, What's Another Year? If you just look at the title, I think a lot of us look at another year. And I think every year can always be better for all of us, through sickness and through health. I think we have to look forward, always hope for the best, and that's why I think What's Another Year is appropriate.
In association with Windsor Motor Mall. Drive happy in Windsor Motor Mall, Galway, with hundreds of used cars to suit your budget.
Good morning, you're listening to Galway Talks with John Morley, and we're sticking with Galway greats, and Mary Bennett stays opposite me now. And Mary, I know that you've been very involved in Galway City, things like the People of the Year Awards and different things, but getting colour into the city is something you're very passionate about over the past 20 years.
Yes, that's right. You know, I remember looking at the city, and we were always involved in many things, you know, in the city. And one day somebody said to me, you know, she said, your city is very dull. Now, we had Brady Shipman and Martin had did a survey, and part of that survey was saying that we should never have flowering of any kind or greenery in the city. Galway was not meant to have that. This is going back many, many years. So I got really a bit nervous about this, that this was in a document and that we weren't welcome to put flowers or anything. So I asked her to come with me one day. She's a great expert from LA. And she came with me, and I drove her up the streets and down the streets. Now, she said to me all she needed to do was collect her early in the morning, and she wanted to see every nook and corner, which I showed her. And it took quite some time, and she asked me many questions, but we came back, and the result of the survey was that we're very grey as a city, and that you look up at the sky, and 9 times out of 10, it's a grey sky. You look at your buildings, and most of them are grey or black or dull. And she said, why, everywhere I went, every street I went up, she said, there was a greyness about your city, and grey is a colour that you shouldn't be promoting or showing. So she came back and she said to me, Mary, get colour into your city. You have the most beautiful city that I've been in for a long time, but she said, you're lacking colour everywhere. So as a result of that, we started the flowering of Galway. And Jimmy Lydon, who was Lydon's bakery, had a great love for flowers, and he had a wonderful garden himself. So he brought me up and he said, now we're going to start making baskets. I said, why, Jimmy? We can buy them and sell. No, no, he said, you can plant a little basket for so little, and you can put this for so little. So, of course, we didn't realise what we were up against. When we went around and canvassed the town, we had over 700 orders.
Wow.
And today, We have 700 different people using flowering baskets, hanging baskets. It makes no difference, but it certainly is one way of getting colour into your city. She also commented me on the way I had the treasure chest, and I had told her that I had been in New Orleans and I had led a parade down there many years ago for St. Patrick's Day. And I brought back with me many of the images that I saw down there. And when the treasure chest was being designed, that is what I was trying to imagine what New Orleans was. So she said she loved the building, but she loved that if we would try and get more colour into our shop fronts and not be plastery and not be all this flag bearing. All we needed was to do it gracefully and graciously. And the same with our ups, you know, our villages going in, we say Salt Hill or our roadways going there. She said we needed colour, and because we had the most beautiful location with the bay on the side, we had everything going for us, except we were losing the centre. Now, I talked to city manager many times about this, and you can see what they have done now. They're doing a wonderful job of Air Square, and this is Salt Hill is doing a great job, and I think the onus is on all of us to try and encourage more.
Now, there's been a lot of awards to you over the years, Mary. The Freedom of the City in 2011, that must have been a huge honour for you.
Oh, it was unbelievable. I can't still believe I got it. I wasn't worthy of it. And I remember being in Germany at a trade fair when I got a call to tell me. And my crew called me and I said, I don't believe you. I said, this is a mistake. I was positive because I said, why should I get the honour of Freedom of the City? But I can assure you, I appreciate it so much. But I thank them sincerely for putting me on that list, which I don't think I deserved. And, you know, it really shocked me out of existence, to tell you the truth, because, you know, I don't do things for honours. I can't understand I'm being allowed to do them. And I think to be allowed and encouraged is what we should be doing with everybody, because I think everybody has so much to give. And being allowed to give it is a blessing in itself. And I have been blessed that I have been encouraged and helped in everything I did since I started promoting tourism. It's my love and it's my pastime, and it's something I hope I live to be able to do a little more of.
Yeah, I know you sold Treasure Chest last summer, but you're not resting on your laurels. You were very involved in the Mayor's Ball at the weekend as well, so you're keeping going.
Well, I think it's great to be able to, and every day is a blessing that you're allowed to do this and that your health allows you to do it. It was the 51st Mayor's Ball that I've been involved in.
Wow.
And I'm involved in it because it's a great charity. I mean, we have made about maybe 60,000 for the Mayor's Ball. Wow. I got a lot of help with it this year. And every year, every mayor has contributed so much to charity through his Mayor's Ball. And that is since the first one I did, which was Mayor Smith, back in 1972 in Sea Point.
Wow.
And Paddy O'Flaherty, who is no longer with us, was a wonderful mayor who encouraged me to go along and do mayor balls. And he was the first big mayor ball that we had. And we got Aer Lingus from Dublin to come down and do the catering. And it's wonderful that in today's world, that we had a hotel last night, or the night before last, that had 600 people, all well looked after, and giving us so much money that we now are helping five charities, five very worthy charities. And they give it with a great heart, and that is what happens with every mayor. Last year, Clodagh Higgins did the same. Every year, I can go back through all of them. They give every year so much to charity, and it's a privilege for me to be able to get that organised and done.
Your passion for all things Galway is evident for all to hear and see, Mary, and it's been a pleasure chatting with you as well. Your last song to take you out, Galway Girl, it was a very easy decision. Why did you pick this one?
I picked it because, well, I love Sharon Shannon anyway, you know, and I think anything about Galway is great, and I know here in Galway Bay FM, that was the first time I heard the Galway Girl. And we had a trip up the Corrib with Scall one evening, a whole lot of visitors, and they sang the Galway Girl, and it must be the first time they'd ever heard it. And it's wonderful to hear it today. And I know when I was out with the Volvo Ocean Race and we were letting the boats off in the States to come to Galway, we were all there on the quay singing the Galway Girl. And, you know, it's wonderful that it, just how many years later that is still going strong.
Mary Bennett, you are a Galway great, and thank you for joining us on Galway Talks.
I took a stroll down the old long walk on a day I met a little girl and we started to talk on a grand soft day.
That is the Galway Girl for a wonderful Galway lady, Mary Bennett. And the texts in support of Mary coming in this morning. Such a wonderful programme listening to Mary Bennett. She's so inspirational, says this listener. And there's plenty more texts along the same line. So thank you for Mary for joining me on her birthday. So I need to wish her a belated happy birthday as well. She joined me to record that yesterday. So thanks indeed, Mary. I know she had a busy weekend. And I wish her all the health and happiness for the future as well. Now, though, we're turning our attention to sport. And I'm joined in the studio by Ollie Turner. Ollie, it was a busy weekend. I suppose we'll have to start with Gaelic games. And a big weekend, I suppose, for Galway. But in terms of looking ahead to next weekend, there's some news.
Yeah, David Goff from Meath is going to referee the Connacht final. That's Galway and Mayo in Pearse Stadium. It'll be very interesting to see how that one pans out. Given that we now know as well the draw is going to take place, John, at 3 o'clock tomorrow for the knockout stages, the last 16. Four groups of four. So Galway-Mayo, depending on whether they win or lose, will be seeded one or two for that draw. And likewise, the Leinster finalists as well. Will be, and the winners of each of the provincial championships will be seeded one, and the runners-up will be seeded two. So it will make a difference to win. And if you're wondering about the motivation of winning a Connacht final, you can bet your bottom dollar it's important to win and avoid most probably Dublin and Kerry in your group.
Yeah.
So that's coming up tomorrow at 3 o'clock, the draw. The match of the weekend, well, it's debatable. I think there were two great matches in the hurling championship. Clare and Cork was something else, 3.26 to 3.24. I mean, that's just ridiculous scoring, isn't it? And a terrific win for Clare in the end, winning by 2 points. But not to withstand as well, Carlow put in a great showing for so long in their match with Dublin before eventually succumbing by 5 points. And Antrim beat Wexford. So they were extraordinary results in the Leinster Championship before we got to yesterday in Pearse Stadium, when Galway trailed Kilkenny by 4 points at half-time, and indeed well into the second half until they put in a strong late finish and Conor Whelan got the equaliser deep into stoppage time, 223 to 29 points. I mean, the most athletic people in GA now are the umpires, which wouldn't have always been the way, but the amount of times they're going to have to lift a white flag and wave it in the air in modern day hurling, they need to be fit.
Did Galway miss a trick? I know that Kilkenny were missing a lot of key players.
I think it makes no odds. I think they're going to meet again in the Leinster final. Yeah. It was a dress rehearsal. But in terms of Galway maintaining their unbeaten record against Kilkenny in the round robin Leinster Championship, it's just a nice little record that they've maintained for the last 6 years, and they did so again yesterday. Like last year when they pulled a draw out of the hat in Kilkenny, they did something similar. But the key is now to go on and win that Leinster title.
There was a lot of action in the Féile competitions as well.
Yeah, the ladies football Féile was on at the weekend. Huge amount of activity all around the county and the city. So well done to the organisers. It's no mean feat to continually run these events every year between referees and organisers and umpires and everything else that goes with it. Clare Galway won Division 1, beating Munavie Abbey in the final. St Michael's won Division 2. Menlashgahana won Division 3. The Division 4 title went to Salt in Lochnacara, and Clare Galway also won Division 5. So a great weekend for that club.
And lots happening in the soccer as well.
Galway United women drew 0-0 with Piemont, and the Galway United men drew 1-1 with Shamrock Rovers, both taking on defending league champions, both away from home. So you'd have to say two decent results. The Galway United women staying unbeaten and still top of the table. For the Galway United men, they've got a busy weekend coming up, including a bank holiday Monday trip to Dublin to take on Bohemians. So that'll be a tough tie for them as well. Tonight, Shamrock Rovers played Drogheda in Tallaght Stadium at 8 o'clock. And cross channel wins for Arsenal and Manchester City yesterday, so they're taking that title race right down to the wire.
There's plenty of golf as well.
Last night I stayed up to watch Masters McIlroy and Lowry. Now, obviously Rory McIlroy was the leading light. They left it late, but they got there in the end to win in a playoff and the first extra playoff hole against Chad Ramey and Martin Traynor. The tournament is the Zurich Classic of New Orleans, so it means that the Irish pair get some very valuable FedEx points in terms of the overall order of merit in the United States PGA Tour, finishing on 25 under par. Good week's work for Lowry and McIlroy, who I think will be paired together for many a long day, and I'm sure they had typically salubrious night in store as well after a great victory for them on the PGA Tour.
Plenty happening in the snooker as well. Once I have a few hours, I'll watch a bit of that.
World Championship, you're time enough yet, John. It gets down to the business end later on this week when it gets to the quarterfinals. Mark Allen leads John Higgins 9-7, so he's become a right good match player, Mark Allen, against the dogged Higgins, who's still in good form. He needs four more to advance. Ronnie O'Sullivan 10-6 up against Ryan Day. He should be getting through, and so too Kyron Wilson. Judd Trump, Kyron Wilson, Ronnie O'Sullivan, Mark Allen, some of the big names are really starting to wind up now for the last eight.
Okay, and where are we going next, Dolly?
Rugby, of course, great weekend for Corinthians and Galwegians, both winning their Energia League playoffs, so both promoted, John, which was terrific for them. Also, of course, we saw as well at the weekend, England completing six in a row of women's Six Nations titles, so they really are a force to be reckoned with. But for Ireland, they can be very happy with their third place finish after beating the Scots 15-12, so a good finish to a reasonably successful Six Nations campaign for the Irish women's rugby team. Well done to them. Finally, to racing, John, it was sad news yesterday for those who follow horse racing. They'd know the name Shishkin, a horse running for Nicky Henderson that has won twice in Cheltenham and was being readied to bring over to Punchestown to take on the Willie Mullins star Galopin Deschamps in what would be a real heavyweight bout in the Punchestown Gold Cup on Wednesday. But alas, Shishkin obviously reared up in the horse box, fractured a hind leg and had to be put down. Terribly sad, tragic accident that really has upset a lot of people in the world of horse racing. This evening, there's action in Ireland in Naas. It all starts there at 10 to 5.
Brilliant, Dolly Turner. Thank you for joining us for the sports review of a busy weekend of sport. And that's where we make our leave for the programme today. My thanks to Darren Kelly, who produced, and Siobhan, who took your calls on reception. There's already a very busy programme for tomorrow, including a look at the Blas na Baltana Food Festival. The Gradham Gear List has been confirmed. So we'll have Galia Vlagailge in to discuss that. We're also looking at the elections with on Commission Talcon, the election commissions. We have our Garda slot, trending topics, evergreen and music mornings as well. So it's already very busy. If you want to get involved tomorrow, do so on our email comments at goibayfm.ie. That's where we make our leave for today though. Up next is Ronan Lardner with the Live Wire. Stay safe and have a very good afternoon from all of us here in Galway Talks.
Galway Talks in association with Windsor Motor Mall. Visit Windsor Motor Mall Galway and get free 3-year warranty on hundreds of used cars.